This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Jason here. Welcome to part three of my conversation, Dr. Riley Dugan from University of Dayton. Dr. Riley, are you ready to talk about the future of sales?
I'm ready.
As I say all the time, the future is now. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of people, they think, oh, in the future, we're going to do this. And I still see so many people who are selling the way they've been selling for so long and how that doesn't work and it's not applicable anymore. I tell people all the time, if you're selling the same way you did 2 years ago or before, like, you're missing opportunities and you're basically doing it wrong from a customer perspective. I have a question, but just so people know, if you're tuning in right now and you skip the other two and you're coming straight to this because you want to know what Dr. Riley says about the future of sales, he is a associate professor and chairperson of the management and marketing department at University of Dayton. His college and his sales team that he is a part of is a national collegiate champion winner for this year, 2023. He has won an award as a teacher in marketing and like from a marketing association of marketing. And so he knows his stuff. He's here with a background in accounting, an MBA, political science, literature, pretty much everything but sales. Yet here he is. I love, because I think, again, my own biased opinion is that makes you really different and effective at sales, because you're not just thinking, oh, sales is this. It's, let me see what the research actually says about sales and how do you construct a sales program, a sales process, and a salesperson, right? Like, how can you make yourself into an effective professional salesperson? So for future of sales, let's start out this conversation with, what do buyers want from a salesperson?
I think value, right? So in any interaction that we have, whether it's a buyer-seller interaction relationship, whether it's interacting with our friends or family, we want value. And I think that's critical. And whether that value is a different perspective, a clearer understanding of what it is I might need as a buyer, there has to be something that you're providing as a salesperson. Otherwise, you're just wasting the buyer's time. And so, providing value is something that you do only through a great deal of research, a great deal of preparation, and a great deal of understanding of what the specific value drivers of the customer might be.
Okay. So what do they want less of? Let's do the more of less of conversation.
Well, I think they want more time, right? So I think everyone wants more time. And so I think they want less of salespeople who might be taking too much of their time. Right. So, and I think I alluded to this in the first episode, but, research has shown that almost 70% of the buyer's buying decision is made right by the time they interact with the salesperson for the first time. Right. So, all that time, the salesperson might be spending, asking sort of these situational questions like, OK, so tell me, how many factories do you guys have and how many different product lines do you guys have and how many employees do you have? OK, so let me get this from you. It's like, the buyer doesn't have time and the interest to sort of rehash all those things with you, right? That those are things that you should have maybe figured out in advance of the meeting. So buyers want more time and they want less of salespeople taking their time, right? Because everyone's constrained with regards to time, because, even though it's technology, and perhaps we'll get to some of the technological advances that will impact the selling world, even though technology has made, in some respects, our lives easier, right, by maybe taking some of these, kind of more mundane clerical tasks off our desks, in theory, which should save us time. In fact, it has oftentimes done the opposite, where, we have more stressors on our time now as we sort of progress and people are working longer hours. People just want more time and they want less of people trying to take it and not providing value with that time.
So what do you think leads to the sales mode of taking up a prospect's time with those questions that they should have researched?
Yeah, and I think it's just, I don't want to say it's a lack of respect for the buyer's time, but I think it probably is, right? So, the reality is that, we have to treat the customer's time like we do our own time, right? Because time is a finite resource. We're not getting it back, right? Whether you're Bill Gates, Elon Musk, or somebody who's living on the streets, we only have 24 hours in a day, right? And so, you know, this was really sort of hit home for me. One of my co-authors, who was a few years younger than I am and in great health, unexpectedly passed away recently after, you know, having a choking incident where he lost oxygen to his brain and unfortunately passed away a couple months ago. And I bring this up only to say that, you know, we don't know how much time we have on this planet. Right. And so treating time as the valuable resource that it is something that's so critical. And I think we oftentimes, you know, lose track of that and we waste our own time. Right. So because we waste our own time, we feel comfortable wasting other people's time. And that's tragedy, if you ask me.
How much of this, because as you're talking about, you know, salespeople wasting other people's time and not value and not in the words you use, which is actually perfect, respecting the buyer's time, mm-hmm. is the salesperson is in the mode where their job and their time is to talk to people and move people forward. Mm-hmm. And one of these things that happens where when it's your job to do it, you just like are in it because you're getting paid to do it. You just think everyone is playing that same game and mm-hmm. you forget that other people are doing things. Like I'm just thinking of a lot of salespeople I know where it's like, well, this is my job to make calls and follow up and chat with people and have conversations. And so I'm just going to do that. And I remind other people, it's like, it's not their job to, yep. you know, respond or be your customer or play by your rules and game, because this is what you do Monday through Friday and you have a pipeline and quota.
Yeah. And then, you know, it gets back at something that my sister, you know, and who I referenced in that first episode is sort of an informal mentor for me. You know, she said with regards to academic writing, right, or just writing in the business world in general, you know, if you can say it in 10 pages, great. But if you can say it in one paragraph, even better. Right. So if you can provide value to a customer in a 30-minute conversation, yeah, that's great. But it's a lot better if you can provide value to that customer in a 5-minute conversation. Right. So you're providing the same amount of value, but not taking up as much of their time. So even though it's a salesperson's job to have these conversations, you know, a lot of them can be, I think, a lot shorter and briefer than they are. Right. So, you know, me personally, so when I play the buyer, when my sales students are doing role plays, you know, I tend not to be a big rapport person. Right. And some people might, you know, take that as me being brusque or curt or short or whatever the case may be. But it's like, hey, you know what? Like, I don't need a salesperson to talk to me about, you know, the basketball game or to take me to the bar. I've got friends I want to do that with. Right. So we don't need to have this chummy conversation, because I'm looking at my watch and I'm saying, well, you know what? I've got another meeting in 20 minutes. So come to the damn point. Right. So maybe that's sort of, you know, anathema to, you know, sort of the way that I think we teach sales, where it's relationship building and relationship focus. But the honest reality is the relationship is important, but it is a byproduct of providing value, right? So I'll have a relationship with you if I can clearly see how you're providing me value. Otherwise, you're just taking my time, right? Because again, you know, I don't need you to take me to the ball game. I don't need you to take me out to eat and, you know, all these other golfing and all these other sorts of things. You know, I got friends to do that with. What I need is some value for my business, and how can you provide that in as little time as possible, I think is something that, you know, buyers, professional buyers are focused on.
Well, and I think what's interesting, and I forget who it was on the season so far, talking about how that model is totally different than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago, where it was wining and dining and yeah. events and outings to build the relationship, to build the trust, to then close the deals, right? Now it's like what you're talking about is the value and the trust and then a relationship and maybe those things after the fact, right? It's like, hey, this went well. Like, let's spend some time together versus needing to be so front heavy on this, you know, rapport relationship side, because if they, you know, Bob Berg mode, if they know, like, and trust me, then that will be enough right. to close the deals. Where do you see the role or the process of salespeople changing, either what should be done now, right? Because the future is now, or in the future, especially taking into account what you just said about buyers.
Yeah. So, I mean, any sort of discussion of the future of sales would be, I think, incomplete without sort of an understanding of artificial intelligence, right? And so, you know, at the university, you know, ChatGPT, which I'm sure you've heard of, these and these other large language models, is sort of, you know, sort of dominated the discourse recently, right? And so, you know, professors are worried that, oh, well, this is going to enable my students to cheat and all these other sorts of things. And I say, you know what, that's the last worry that I have. right? I'm more worried about these sorts of, you know, artificial intelligences taking jobs, right? And then what happens, right? So I watched a podcast recently by a couple of professors at Wharton at the University of Pennsylvania. And after watching it, I've never had this feeling before in my life. And the feeling that I had was, you know, there are various times where, you know, you sort of feel helpless, right? So, you know, if I have to hire a contractor to do something that I can't do and I'm paying out the nose and they're never on time and, you know, I'm getting frustrated. It's like, man, I feel helpless, right? I wish I could just, you know, lay the flooring myself or, you know, put up the iron fence around my house myself. But this was the first time in my life after watching this sort of presentation about ChatGPT, where I really felt helpless simply because I was human, right? Where I think a lot of people, when they think of artificial intelligence, they think of it as a new technology. And that's really not what it is at all, right? It's a completely new intelligence. If you want to think of it in a different way, it's really a completely different species, one that can learn more effectively than we can, one that doesn't ask for a raise, one that doesn't get tired, one that doesn't have squabbles with their coworkers. And so, you know, when looking at all the things that it could do and doing my own research in terms of how it's already impacting the business world, I think we're seeing and will see a lot of back office type positions maybe being made redundant by artificial intelligence. And I don't know if those jobs are going to come back. And I think as a society, we need to have a sort of mature and deep discussion about how this is going to sort of impact us in the business world and then in the world just at large. And so for me, I'm very worried, right? And so when I go back to teaching in August, right, because the students are gone for the summer at this point, one of the things I'm going to highlight to my students is we're going to use ChatGPT as a tool. It's not something we're going to avoid or shun. We're going to use it, right, as a teaching tool. But I'm also going to tell these students, I'm going to be like, look, never before in the history of mankind, right, have your interpersonal skills been more important than they are now, right? Because, you know, you can't have the same sort of relationship maybe with artificial intelligence that you can with a real person. You know, the title of this podcast is Authentic Persuasion. Some people may not think that artificial intelligence is very authentic. And so that's one advantage that we have right now as humans, right, in terms of our ability to be authentic. And so you really need to sort of make sure that your interpersonal skills are strong so that people want to be around you. Right, we just talked about how buyers don't want their time wasted. At the same time, too, we need to strengthen, I think, our interpersonal skills to the point where it's like, hey, I know I could buy, you know, through this bot, through this, you know, algorithm or whatever the case may be, but I prefer dealing with an actual human. So make sure that if they're dealing with you, it's because you're really strong in that area. So that's going to be something that I increasingly emphasize, is making sure their interpersonal skills are very, very strong.
I absolutely love that. I had not thought about that. And again, this is why I love hosting this podcast and having these conversations, because I see things differently because you're in it and everyone has a different perspective. The whole conversation about job concerns, worries, loss, like productivity, this and that, the way you put it is perfect, is that never before have your interpersonal skills been more important. And definitely, you know, want to emphasize that, because it's so correct, right? There's the things that AI, technology, anything can do. And then there's where do we still need people or want people? And I love, you know, you said it, where the buyers don't like their time wasted. And so if you're going to approach them, it's got to be valuable. It's got to be worth it. It's got to be something more, something they're looking for, craving, for the same reason. There's some things that we all will buy online without any adult supervision. We don't need any help. Read some reviews, buy it. It's either insignificant or it's a commodity, or we just know enough about it where we don't need help. Right. And then there's the times where we still call somebody or we still need help, right? Like buying a house. Are you so good that you can just buy a house online and get a mortgage online and not talk to anybody? Or do you need that guy, that person with the interpersonal skills, like shopping, for example? If you know what you're going to order couch-wise, then order it online, right? Like you don't need help. If you don't know, then you go to a store, you know, you don't know what you're going to get, but you're looking and craving for somebody who will be a professional to help you figure out what the best, safest, and smartest choice is for what you're looking for and help you feel like you're making the right decision. So I absolutely love that. where do you see the technology benefiting, like not just AI, but any of the current or future technologies benefiting or aiding, helping salespeople, especially if we're leaning on them and their interpersonal skills?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that comes to mind first is autonomous vehicles, right? So, you know, I ask my students in my class, like, okay, well, you know, many of you have children someday. And so raise your hand if you want to have children. And if you do, like whether you're going to buy your 16 or 17 year old a car when they turn that age so they can drive. And everyone raises their hand. I'm like, I think that by the time that your kids, if you have them, are 16 or 17, we won't be driving cars, right? We'll be in autonomous vehicles. You know, and I think something like that is something that will have a huge impact on the sales profession. Think about if you're an outside salesperson making multiple calls per day, right? Now all of a sudden, I don't need to drive the car. I can sit in this car and do my paperwork and enter all the things into the CRM system that before maybe I had to do at the end of the day in the office. So it's going to make something like that is just going to make us so much more productive. And it's something we probably are not even thinking about, right? And so I only bring that up as an example to say that, you know, there are going to be technologies where it might not be clear initially how they're going to impact the selling process, but they will, right, in terms of how we go about and live our day. So I think that's something that, again, people don't really necessarily think of as being related to sales, but for a certain type of salesperson can be hugely impactful in terms of making their lives more productive.
I love it because it's true. And I don't lean into it because I'm not the most like early adopter mode, but I have a friend and he uses something in his Zoom meetings when he's meeting with clients or anybody. And then literally this AI is going through the transcript, summarizing the notes and then giving him that notes. You just plug that into a CRM and now all of a sudden that's in the CRM. So it removes the one part that most salespeople don't like doing or do well enough, which is actually keeping the CRM updated, right? And where does that technology do it so that, again, they can just focus on what they do best? So I think that's amazing application. It's the efficiency, right? Like if you're worried about the technology replacing you, then that's something to really think about. Like what is your actual value versus just helping you become more efficient? I think that future of, you know, let's say your students in 16, 20 years when they have a family, have kids, and that kid is old enough to drive. I feel like that's been the same potential thought for a long time now that, you know, the self-driving car, like I know the technology is more advanced, but I feel like, you know, since the Jetsons cartoon, like everyone's been just waiting for that moment of flying cars flying cars, self-driving cars, all that stuff. It'd be fascinating to see if that does happen, let's say in 20 years, or what that percentage looks like. So I think that's interesting. And then the extension is would you want your kids in a self-driving autonomous car? Would you trust that or not? And depends on what your experience is so far. All right. So
I'd probably trust a more than 16-year-old driver.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a thing, right? Like it's a super side note, but in San Francisco, there's, you know, self-driving cars that are just moving their way through the city and just seeing. And the feedback is they do well. They avoid accidents. They're overly cautious. So they slow down and stop way too often, but they're still fundamentally better than a lot of people on the road. And so it's funny and fascinating. And then just think about where that technology will be in, you know, 15, 20 years. Right. Speaking of like the technology side still, with the students that you have, where do you teach them to find the balance in communication tools, chat, SMS, email, phone calls? Where do you see the value? Where do they want to lean in versus not leaning in? You know, looking at even generational, but, you know, the kind of people that are coming through your program.
Yeah, that's really important, you know, and sort of like, you know, what sort of is wrapped up in that term generational that you use there, right? So, you know, I tell students, it's not about how you want to communicate, it's how the receiver wants to receive their messages, right? So yeah, maybe if you're interacting with another Gen Z individual, yeah, maybe chat is appropriate, you know, emoticons and emojis and all these sort of things are appropriate. But, you know, if you're dealing with someone who's 60, that's probably not going to be as effective, right? So, you know, maybe email is more appropriate, or maybe they want a phone call. So again, it's not what you want to communicate, or it's not the medium through which you want to communicate that's important. It's the person who you're communicating with. How do they want to receive the messages, right? That's what you need to figure out, right? So you need to be comfortable and versatile using sort of these different, methods of communication. But again, it speaks to a larger point about sales. It's not about the buyer, or it's not about the salesperson. It's always about the buyer, right? It's always about the other person. What do they want? And that's how you have to communicate with them.
And that's fundamentally true, right? And that's where I think a lot of people in sales, because they're human, they're just focused on themselves and what they think. And like I said, when I first started in sales, I thought everyone was like me and would want exactly what I would want if I was a customer. Mm-hmm. And so I sold that same way and it was completely ineffective, especially because the part of the group that's analytical like me, it would only make things worse by giving lots of spreadsheets and data and facts and figures. So actually made it so I was like 0% effective, not even like 25%. How do the students take that? How do they, obviously, you know, they're there to learn, they're open-minded, hopefully they're in a learning mode, but where, you know, how well does that go over, I guess? Do they embrace that? Do they utilize that? Like the seller first mindset or the buyer first mindset?
I think they take to it very well. Yeah, absolutely. So they take to it very well. I think they understand, you know, I think we tend to have like really good, good students in the sense of just good people. And that makes my job a lot easier. So they're not self-absorbed, right? So I think a lot of, you know, the sort of stereotypes about younger people is they're self-absorbed. I don't see a lot of that, right? And so I see a lot of students who are just inherently focused on other people, right? Which is good because as a Catholic institution, that's what we sort of want to inculcate. And so having that sort of mindset where it's not about me, it's about others, how can I help others, is naturally a great mindset to have for sales. And so for me, it's pretty easy to sort of, you know, kind of teach them that, you know, it doesn't really matter what you want. It's what the customer wants. They understand that intuitively. I think just by basis of their sort of their background that they grew up in and sort of the larger mission of the university.
Love it. Final thoughts, final words on the future of sales, whatever you think of when you hear that beyond the technology and the AI side. Yeah,
people tend to be, sort of worried and pessimistic about the future, and I tend to be a pessimistic individual myself, sort of a Cassandra, to speak. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, whether we want change to happen or not, it's going to happen, right? So we have to be adaptive. We have to be willing to roll with it because we can't stop it, right? So, you know, a lot of these changes that we're talking about with respect to artificial intelligence and so forth are, you know, macro environmental. So it really doesn't matter who's in office. It doesn't matter, what the economy looks like or what country we're in or what part of the country we're in. Like these changes will happen regardless, and they're going to have such a profound impact on how we live lives and go about our professional lives. And that might be scary for some at first. I know it's scary for me, but the reality is that whether, you know, we're scared or not, we have to deal with it. We have to face it head on. And it goes back to the idea of stoic training where, you know, worry about the things that we can control. I can't control whether or not I get replaced by artificial intelligence, as a professor here at the university, but I can control how I spend my money and making sure that, you know, if that does happen, however many years from now, my family's financially prepared to deal with it. So really focusing and worrying about only those things that are within our locus of control, right? And then accepting change and adapting to it, you know, whether we want it to or not, I think is just so critical.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely love it. Standing here listening to you and just thinking about the fact that you're teaching the future of sales, right? The people now going through this program, paying to go to a university to learn sales, to then go out there in the world and hopefully change the way sales is done. And part of what you're doing is teaching them stoic philosophy and things that people might not think like, that's not sales. That's not about sales. Or they might not think like, okay, I should teach this. And that's why I love these kind of programs that you're involved with. That's why I love having these kind of conversations, is to hopefully open things up and show people like there's more to it, to success in sales than just what's the slick line or how do I ask for the sale or what do I do here? You know, there's so much to it. And I love that. And it's about being prepared and again, making the choices that you can make and controlling what you can control and being okay with whatever else happens. So love it. Absolutely amazing. Thank you again for being here. Links will be in the show notes. Your program at University of Dayton, the management and marketing program, which is what the sales falls under, and then also your LinkedIn for Riley Dugan. Again, Dr. Riley, thank you for what you're doing with the future of sales, what you're doing with your students, how you're guiding them and filling them with all kinds of different tools and strategies and mindsets to help them out in the world, both in sales and, you know, in life as a human and everything that's involved with that. So thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for being here.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this has been great. I absolutely love these conversations. So fun. As hopefully people can tell, I learn as much from these as hopefully you do as well. I'm taking lots of notes in between the conversations. We're chatting and I get excited and I almost forget to just hit record and keep moving forward because I'm excited to learn and nerd out on these conversations. And so hopefully you've got value. If you tuned in for this or any of these, there's a reason. There's a reason you're here. There's some value, something that you were supposed to get. Hopefully you got it and maybe more. Thank you for being a part of these podcasts, for tuning in. Because again, this is the only way that sales is going to change is when we all do sales and look at sales and act as salespeople out there in the world in different ways and changing it from a dirty word and things that people have this feeling about, like the smarmy side where it's just more about the salesperson. And then we shifted into a profession. So thank you once again for tuning in, for being here. Thank you, Dr. Riley. And thank you, everybody, for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.